Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back. My name is Kit.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, a TV and film podcast. And today we're covering a very special movie because sometimes our patrons are able to obligate that we cover a specific film, spend an entire episode on it. And that's what's happened here. But before we get into that, just be aware you can email the show at any time at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. You can support the show financially and have perks like that one at patreon.com/streamingthings, as well as not financially, for free, by just sharing the show, rating and reviewing the show wherever you're listening to this. That helps the algorithm discover us. That's ever so important. We very much appreciate that.
Notice me, algorithm.
I would say after our debacle with Spotify to make sure that you are subscribed. But if you're listening to this, you have found finding our newest episodes not difficult. So that's pointless here. But I wonder how many people are struggling with that. This is one of the last episodes that you'll get to hear before we head off to Austin, Texas, to work as press covering the South by Southwest Film Festival. So look forward to that content next week, right after our review of Return of the Jedi with Phil. Mm-hmm. So that's things to look forward to. We got big news that House of the Dragon season 2 is dropping officially in June. Mm-hmm. So we'll don't be covering. We don't know when yet, but it's probably, it's definitely a Sunday.
Yeah.
So it might be June 2nd. Might not be. So we've got House of the Dragon season 2 and The Boys season 4 coming for that ass in June on Streaming Things.
Streaming Things, colon, coming for that ass.
That's true. Colon. You can all take that to the bank. Mm-hmm. We are coming for it. And also The Bear, we won't be covering that here most likely, but that's the same month. And The Acolyte.
Ugh, man.
Which is kind of wild. I'm actually really excited for The Acolyte, Steve.
Oh, I am too. These shows suck. It was a, ugh, who has the time to watch all these amazing shows? It's going to be a busy ass month.
Are in shambles right now. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
I just watched the first season of The Bear a week or two ago. Amazing. So I need to catch up and watch season two, bud. Yeah, I got to catch up and watch season two in anticipation for season 3 coming out.
Big old puddle of tears coming up. For sure. Yeah, when I think about The Acolyte, I think, you know, hey, fool me 4 times, Disney. Go ahead and fool me again. I'll watch it. I do like, hey, maybe it's more Andor and less Kenobi. Who knows?
Who knows? Hopefully it is. I mean, it's got a great cast and the premise is good, but, you know, we've said that about other shows before, so we'll see how this one shakes out.
The compulsion to cover The Acolyte is tickling me right after our Star Wars marathon, you know, but mm-hmm. we'll just have to see what life's like. But definitely The Boys season 4, certainly House of the Dragon season 2. And we've got a lot of Patreon only content, some exciting stuff coming up. We'll announce that soon as well. Thank you all. That's all the business news we have for right now. Let's get into what will be exciting for me. The Grand Budapest Hotel from 2014 from legendary director Wes Anderson. There were 3 writers on this project, I believe.
Well, 2 writers. The one writer that they have credited, Stefan Zweig, is an author from the 30s that a lot of the, that Wes and Hugo Guinness, who was the other writer, pulled a lot of inspiration from his works. But he didn't necessarily write this movie. It was just, he was a big inspiration for it.
Right, because he would have been 85-ish.
Something like that.
Yeah. They did credit, I think there's a bit he about did. That at the end of the film, the like literary sources of this, but I didn't know too much about that. Who mandated that we watch Grand Budapest Hotel, Steve?
So Grand Budapest Hotel was mandated to us by none other than Brent Stradamus, which is one hell of an awesome name, if I might say. Everyone else
an auspicious one.
Yeah, everyone who has Patreon names and it's not nearly as good as Brent Stradamus, get to work. But I wrote to Brent Stradamus and asked them why they chose Grand Budapest Hotel for their chosen movie. And this is what they wrote back. They wrote, "The Grand Budapest Hotel is my favorite movie of all time. It is hilarious, both in quiet and in loud ways. It is the apotheosis of Wes Anderson style, in my opinion. It woke me up to Ralph Fiennes as an actor. It is gorgeous to look at, and it is just a perfect movie."
One of these days, I agree with you, Brent Stradamus, but one of these days I want one of the patrons to respond to you. I have no idea. I've never even seen it. You know, I just thought it'd be funny.
I thought it'd be funny to make you guys watch The Other Sister.
Yeah. I just opened Letterboxd and picked the first movie I saw.
So so one thing I wanted to say earlier when we were like, Stefan Zweig, he would have been like 80 years old. He died in 1942 at the age of 60. I just wanted to
say. Oh, wow. He would have been like 140.
Yeah, he was born in 1881.
What if he was like,
when 900 years old you reach, write as good you will not.
That's right. Work with Wes Anderson, you will not.
By the way, sorry, before we get too much further, people who are viewing this on YouTube will notice that I did my very best to try to dress up like a Wes Anderson character. I got a scarf and a pinkish shirt and a gray suit because I love Wes Anderson and I just wanted to make this a biggin, if you would allow me to call it, Chris.
I will not. I thought about it. My brain had a quick, we had a quick trial and the jury ruled no.
Fair. That's fair.
On biggin. I love it though. It's giving.
Thanks. I'm feeling myself actually.
Yeah. It's giving Owen Wilson. No, Luke Wilson.
Oh, wow.
Who surprisingly weren't in this movie. Very, well, one was.
One was, yeah.
But I'm excited to talk about it. So if you're a new listener, what we do is we'll give our overall thoughts on the Grand Budapest Hotel, our history with the film, and then we'll go through what it was like watching it this time, including a scene-by-scene recap, a replay, just talking about every little minutia, every juicy detail of this sumptuous film. Steve, I have to know. I'm assuming because you dressed up like a character that you love this film, but I have to know what you think of it and what it was like watching it this time.
Well, I think your assumption is correct. It's no secret. I'm a huge Wes Anderson fan. He's one of my favorite directors. I love his movies. Grand Budapest Hotel, which, oh my gosh, kid, I don't know if you had the same sort of revelation, but when I saw that the release year was 2014 and my mind was like, no, that was 10 years ago. That couldn't have been. Oh, no. Because I remember going to the theater to watch this movie clear as day. I went and saw it at a movie theater that's local that I don't normally ever go to. It's I don't know if you've ever been to it, kid. It's that theater that's off like Anderson. Like if you get off the Anderson exit and just like drive for like 20 minutes, eventually you come across a theater that's like family owned. It's pretty small. I can't remember the name of that theater off the top of my head, but I saw that with some friends. We're all huge Wes Anderson fans. And honestly, I for a long time, and this is a big announcement. This is a huge announcement. You know, hold on to your seats. For the longest time, I used to tell people my favorite Wes Anderson movie was The Royal Tenenbaums, but I think his best movie is handedly The Grand Budapest Hotel. And I think after I sat down and watched it this time, you know, this might be the fourth or fifth time I've watched this movie. I kind of had a realization where it's like, you know what? I think this is my favorite Wes Anderson movie. You know, Royal Tenenbaums will always hold that special place in my heart, but I just love this movie so much. I think it is the quintessential Wes Anderson movie where all of the the tropes and the style that he leans into and loves to play in. It serves the story best. It serves this story best out of all the stories he's done. The pairing of Gustav and Zero is so hilarious and funny and heartfelt. And I love those two characters running around, getting into trouble. And it's just a beautiful film too. It has that. A lot of Wes Anderson movies are made as if they were stage plays. Like, he will often have like act breaks. He will have, let's introduce the cast, like he does in Royal Tenenbaums. So a lot of his movies are dressed up like stage plays. And I think the way he kind of frames this movie in terms of, we start off on a young girl who's writing a book about an author who wrote this book in the 80s, but he, based off his experience he had in the, what was it, the 60s or something, based off a character's life experience from the 30s, and the way he's using like aspect ratios to differentiate between the time periods, it really works, because a lot of Wes Anderson movies, like I said, feel like stage plays, but they also feel like written like love letters to writers and all that stuff. And the way that it's framed in that way really, really speaks to, I think, the character of this movie. And I will get to the end, but I love the way that kind of comes back at us at the closing moments of the movie. I think it really helps hit the emotional beat. But I'm interested to see, Kit, how you feel about The Grand Budapest Hotel.
I think we had the exact same journey betwixt, if you will, Royal Tenenbaums to Grand Budapest Hotel pipeline. I've always adored the work of Wes Anderson. I think his aesthetic appeals to insufferable douchebags in a way that just is a bullseye for someone like me. I have a lot of fond memories of watching Wes Anderson movies, especially growing up. This movie is only the second time that I've ever seen it, which is kind of surprising. I remember the first time I saw it, or the only other time I saw it. It was at its open. It was one of those situations. I'm not proud of this, but it is what it is. And we're not together anymore, and maybe this is why, this kind of thing. But when Grand Budapest Hotel came out, I was only 2 years sober and freshly moved back to this area and was, you know, getting back into normal life. And my fiance at the time, it was one of those like, hey, don't go see that without me situations. And then I was like, well, I'm going to the movies with Jordan, you know, and I forget what was even out at the time. You know, it was like the Snow White and the Huntsman sequel or something. You know, what else would I have even seen? And she was like, you're not seeing Grand Budapest Hotel, are you? And I was like, no way. But definitely I totally not. Was. And I totally did. And I don't regret it. It was amazing. And so, yeah, revisiting it this time was a blast. I adore this movie. I do think it is without a doubt Wes Anderson's magnum opus. I did not love Asteroid City as much as many of my peers. I wish I had recognized that for the masterpiece that they think it is. I liked French Dispatch more than most people, but ultimately me too. There you go. But I always go back to Royal Tenenbaums, and even I'm a Life Aquatic apologist personally.
Oh, I love that movie.
I like Darjeeling Limited more than almost everyone. That's typically what the one people hate, but I had a good
time. That's the one I'm not a fan of.
Yeah. But I really, truly do think this is far and above his best work. It's a 5-star movie. It's a perfect movie. I think it's flabbergasting at how beautiful it is. And you said it perfectly. It just fits into his aesthetic so well. Like, everything that he always does is at its fullest effect, its final form in this movie, you know? I never even caught on. I guess I'm dumb that I saw the aspect ratio changing, you know, with the girl in the cemetery at the beginning. It's not 4:3, but it's certainly not a full theater ratio. It's somewhere in between. But I didn't catch that there were different time periods, because I feel like it changes at one point while still following Gustav, but I could be wrong. But I did notice frequent aspect ratio changes, all kinds of cool stuff in this movie. I also, like Brent Stradamus said, was not super familiar with Ralph Fiennes' work. Obviously Harry Potter, but nothing too much beyond that. I was a big fan of Joseph Fiennes. You know, I watched Enemy at the Gates and Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah, I remember Joseph Fiennes. I haven't seen him in a minute.
He's my brother Joey. yeah, big fan of the Fiennes. But yeah, I don't know. This is a perfect film. If you haven't seen it, I don't know why you're listening to this, but you definitely got to watch it. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the different aspect ratios they use. So when it kind of starts off in the beginning, it's a 1.85 to 1. Then it goes to a wider style aspect ratio at a 2.40 to 1. And then when they're in the 30s, it's a 1.37 to 1. So it gets a little bit more letter or 4x4 for modern takes. But yeah, it's so good. I love it so much.
But the setting of this film is the former Republic of Zbrowka. And it begins, I believe, with the little girl in the cemetery kind of looking at like a war memorial looking piece. We go to 1985 and it's the man, the original narrator, in this hilarious little skit, like getting interrupted by his kids while he's doing this this introduction. And then we get transported back to 1968 at the Grand Budapest, when it's at this point it's in disarray.
What's that actor's name that plays the 1985 author?
I thought you would know. He plays he's in Batman.
Tom Wilkinson.
Tom Wilkinson. I knew it was a Tom.
Cause didn't Tom Wilkinson just recently pass?
He did. He did.
Within the last year or two.
Did you catch the Lea Seydoux jump scare?
I did. Yep.
Yeah. That would have been like right after she became known to Americans at all. Mm-hmm. So he was early on the Lea Seydoux train.
Yeah. I had totally forgotten that she was in this movie. So when she shows, I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah. You.
I had to pause it and look it up, even though because it's in like a far wide shot. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure if she would ever get a close up. So I had to. And then, of course, right after I press play, it like zoomed in on her face.
That was the second movie of this week where I had a Lea Seydoux jump scare. It was this one.
What was the first one? Dune 2?
Dune Part 2. And she pops up. I'm like, what is that, Lea? What are you doing, girl? Yeah.
Margo?
Why are you sneaking up all the time?
In one of the most stunning scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
I love in that. Never mind. That's a spoiler. But we'll talk. We have to talk about Dune 2. We still haven't talked about that as a family. I guess we'll talk about it on the plane. But after we get Tom Wilkinson, we cut to 1968 Grand Budapest, and it's in disrepair. We get this whole set piece about how all of the guests are solitary and lonely there. And then we are introduced to Mr. Zero Mustafa, the mysterious owner of the hotel.
Mm-hmm. I love that. The young writer is played by Jude Law. And he's continuing. You assume that he's actually narrating the novel that the young girl's reading in the most recent present, I guess. It's kind of hard to keep track of. But he has this line that I'm like, ooh, I'm going to steal that anytime I have like a writer's block or I'm feeling not very creative, where Jude Law's like, I was suffering from scribe's fever, common amongst the intelligentsia. sorry, I've got scribe's fever. It's really common amongst the intelligentsia.
Mm. It's true. Just tell, that's what you tell your boss when you haven't produced anything for the week.
Right. You would take something for your scribe's fever.
Yeah. You're safe.
I've never had that before. I know.
There's a reason. But in the midst of I think it's Jason Schwartzman, as I recall, the bellboy.
Monsieur Jean?
Bellboy, that was so insulting. The proper term, the concierge, the current concierge, is telling him about who Mustafa is. And then a guy starts choking to death and he has to run off.
Shit.
But Jude Law is not interested in this. There are honestly so many actual laugh out loud moments in this movie. I don't think it gets enough credit for how actually funny it is.
It's so funny.
But then eventually we cut to Jude Law, the writer, in the bathtub, and nearby Mustafa says that he admires his work. He tells him he didn't buy the hotel. And I like that there's just this guy like getting hosed down.
I wonder what that's about.
It's like a de-lousing kind of thing. But he invites him to dine with him and tell him his story. What were you going to say?
I love F. Murray Abraham. He's such a great actor.
Incredible.
He was I want him to be in like everything because he brings such warmth and heart to the. This is a fairly minor role, but he. It's so well done. Like he just sticks out and he just looks like he lives in this hotel, even though it's like the Grand Budapest is now in a state of shabbiness and disrepair. He just looks like a guy who is just trying to hold on to that memory that he has. And you immediately feel for the guy. And that's because F. Murray Abraham is such a great actor.
He plays such a good, drunken, creepy, full of himself old man. Which he's not in this movie, but he's in Mythic Quest. But also, I don't think you watched White Lotus, do you?
I have not seen it yet, no.
Yeah, so White Lotus season 2, F. Murray Abraham is crushing it. It was his destiny to play that role because it was like Mythic Quest combined with some new level of creepiness. But he's great. I love seeing him. He does such a good job in what limited time he has in this film. But he takes us back to the heyday of the Grand Budapest in 1932. And the movie is split into, I believe, was it 5 parts or 6? I think it's 5.
I think you're right.
5 acts like a play. Madame Monsieur Gustave, part 1. And they're consoling an anxious woman who doesn't want to leave him. And this is the original concierge.
Played by Tilda Swinton, who is under a ton of makeup to look like she's 84 years old.
yeah, very well done. And we also meet Zero when he was originally a lobby boy, and he's giving him labyrinthine instructions without even knowing who he is. And at some point, he's like, "Wait a second, who hired you? I hire people." So he ignore all my instructions. We have to do the official interview right now.
That scene is so hilarious because he pulls out this coin. He's like, "Take this coin and light a candle for Tilda Swinton's character." And the whole time, is the actor named Tony Revolori? Mm-hmm. Revolori? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, but yes.
He plays young Zero. He's phenomenal. He keeps raising his hand up to take the coin, but like not getting it the whole time he's being given all these directions. It's hilarious. And then, he's like, "Wait, you haven't been up. Time for me to give you the proper interview."
And then he asked him about his experience. Zero. Education, zero. Family, womp, zero. Mm-hmm. And then tells him that he's hired after he responds to how much he loves the idea, how important a lobby boy is, right?
"Why do you want to be a lobby boy?" "Well, who wouldn't, sir? At the Grand Budapest Hotel. And since it's an institution." Mm-hmm. All he had to say. All he had to say to get this job.
Not only are you hired, you are my best friend.
Yes. I'll go light the goddamn candle.
We cut to 1 month later. We find out a lot about Gustav in this section, that he bangs all the rich old blonde women. And he's we also get to see that the reason that elderly Mustafa sleeps in that room with no bathroom with a tiny bed is those were his old quarters. And it's already touching, at least to me. And I'm a softy. And also he draws on that mustache, which is hilarious. Steve used to do that, make this little pencil stash. I told him to stop and he grew a real one.
Yeah, I totally stopped.
Yeah, that's a real beard.
It's so weird. Real. It's not just pubes I glued onto my face.
Deputy Kovacs is the emissary of the mysterious owner. And Deputy Kovacs is played by none other than
Jeff Goldblum, baby. The Fly. Back in action as a lawyer.
Elderly Mustafa refuses to talk about Agatha, played by Saoirse Ronan. But we won't discuss that, at least not yet. Then we get to part deux, Madame CVDUT, which is De Golf und Taxis, right?
De Golf und Taxis, yeah.
Is what that means. Zero runs up with the newspapers and I love this. There's so much subtlety into the humor of this movie. Like there's two layers to it. Like when he shows him the newspaper, he goes, "Oh my God," because the giant main headline is like tanks are at the border, blah, blah, blah.
There will be war.
Yeah. But it's actually that the Dowager Countess has been found dead is what he's, "Oh my God-ing at."
It's really, really small, like towards the bottom of the page.
It's so funny, you know, because obviously this is like a World War II analogy. And there's like a lot of basically Nazis that are not overtly Nazis in this movie because Zubrowka is not a real place. At least I hope I'm not offending anyone.
It's not.
Okay. I didn't want all of our Zubrowkan fans to be like, oh.
I think there's probably a town of that name, but there's never been a country of that name.
Okay. And that's certainly no empire. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she was dynamite in the sack, by the way. She was 84.
Not that older. I love how he had to sneak that in. Like he's like, I blame myself. And he's kind of exploring like, oh, her kids suck. All the family's going to come out of the woodwork to get everything she's worth. Hopefully she gives me something. Also, I fucked.
Yeah. She was dynamite in the sack, by the way. And it's Ralph Fiennes' delivery of all of this absurd shit that makes it so goddamn perfect. But it's the 19th of October, the closing of the frontier. And they're on a train ride and they get accosted by these Nazi analogs. And we get, even though that Gustav is kind of a piece of shit, we get an early window into how good of heart he can be. Because he's very offended when somebody dares accost his lobby boy. Franz, take your hands off my lobby boy.
You filthy goddamn pockmucked fascist assholes.
That's right. But little Albert, played by Edward Norton, sees what's happening. And luckily, he had a childhood fond memories of Gustav at the hotel, and he helps them pass safely across the border.
There's one really, really great joke that they kind of slide in here is when he's like, do you remember me? I'm Albert. And he's like, oh, I do. How's your mother? I'm very fond of her. Because Gustav probably fucked his mom.
And it might be his son. It might be his son.
Could be. Mm-hmm.
This episode was sponsored by BetterHelp. Folks, it's 2024. What does everybody do in the new year? They make resolutions. They set goals. How about we don't do that? I mean, you can. It's obviously nice to have goals, but it's also a good exercise to focus on things that you like about yourself. You know, not making all those high pressure goals that you might fail at and just feel worse. You can set smaller goals. And I think therapy can be a good way to access things that you enjoy about your life and focusing on the positive, the gratitude. And BetterHelp is a good way to do that. If you've never given BetterHelp a try, it's therapy that's entirely online. You can do it all from your home and access a therapist by filling out a questionnaire. And if you end up not liking that therapist, you can switch. Again, along with the theme of this ad, no pressure whatsoever. They're not going to have their feelings hurt by it. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/streamingthings.
Spring is just around the corner, ladies and gentlemen, so how about we spring into action and give a special shout out to all of the patrons who keep the lights on over here at Streaming Things. And I want to give a special shout out to our super patrons for the month of March. Thank you, Stanton Valentino, Mattelstat, Bryce Coppin, Susie Callahan, Anthony Corona, Sunshine, Huckleberry Cauliflower, Ashley Hazen, Mike from New Hampshire, Brett X, Emily Scarano, Lil Tickler, Svento 7, Jay Scramo, Blothpum, AK Ashley Ray, Adam Busby, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Big Butthorn, Conrad, Kaylee Sampson, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car, Charlie Friday, Alexis Adler, Peaches, Emmy, Haley B, Joe Velez, John Collins, Amanda King, Trisha Bueller, Sun-Loving Mortal, Suzanne Rode, Jen Robinson, Kalisha Reeves, Aaron Armstrong, Kevin Strother, Ashley Powers, Stephen the Fifth, Casey McCain, and Enza. Thank you all so much for supporting Streaming Things, and let's get back to the show.
But he finally gets to the Dowager Countess's mansion and meets Clotilda, which is the maid played by Lea Seydoux. Where is she, Clotilda? And she's still wearing that. Well, no, she's got better nail polish on now as a dead woman. Is that correct?
She took my advice. That's one of the best jokes is when he's like trying to read her poetry to calm her. He just stops in the middle of what this beautiful thing he says. Like, oh, good heavens. What have you done to your hands?
Like, it's disgusting.
I don't know what kind of cream they've put on you in the morgue, darling, but I want some.
I like his directness, actually, me personally. And then we find out Jeff Goldblum, Deputy Kovacs, excuse me, is the executor of the estate as well. And her eldest son is played by Adrian Brody, and who's got like this evil henchman played by Willem Dafoe. But yes. Dimitri gets most of it. But Boy with Apple, this priceless painting, is left to Gustav. And for some reason, Dimitri can't stand that. What's funny to me is that if he'd been okay with 99% of the estate being his and the painting being Gustav's, he probably would have gotten it, right? But he just can't stand that this priceless painting is being given to this concierge who probably fucked his mom.
Do you think if he wants it so bad because he knows that's where Serge hid the second will?
He didn't hide it there yet.
Okay.
He doesn't hide it there until he's wrapping the painting.
Yeah. Okay. You're right.
So he's just a dick.
Well, that's probably like he's kind of pissed off initially, but then when he realizes that there's probably a second will in there, maybe he's like, that's why he's so hell bent on getting
it. I don't think he knows about the second will. I think he's just a dick.
I think you're right.
I go to bed with all my friends is how he responds to Dimitri when he asked if he slept with his mother. We get that triple punch move. And then
The triple punch move, Zero gets the worst of it because he gets punched by Willem Dafoe's Joplin, who's wearing fucking brass knucks.
Yeah. Or like rings on every finger or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's why Zero's the one bleeding. But they end up stealing Boy with Apple, which is kind of Zero's idea. And I forget the actor, he's a well-known character actor, but he's the one that wraps up the painting and you see that he puts a confidential envelope in there.
Oh, Matthew Almerich?
Yes. And he's about to tell Gustav something, but then when he says, I think I cannot say right now. And what he's about to tell him is about the will and what's going on that's shady about Dimitri. There's this hilarious bit where Gustav talks about how priceless and precious it is and how he's going to hang it at the hotel for 80 years and die with it. And there's a beat where they're silent and then we should sell it. And, and Zero's just like, okay. And then I'll leave you everything that I have, along with what we haven't already spent on whores and whiskey.
And then I love the joke. He's like, I'll draw it up now. And he gets up, but then he starts dictating to Zero to write it.
Yep.
Let me draw it up now. Here we go.
We all need a friend like Zero.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
But back at the hotel, the police arrive and ask for Gustav. There's a great moment where he tries to kind of ask Zero how he's going to handle the situation, whether or not he's a snitch, you know. And he's like, yes, I have. I was arrested and tortured by the rebel militia. And he's like, okay, the drill then. Zip it.
Zip it.
But it's little Albert at the head of the police that show up. And then he just runs. Which is funny to me. He doesn't know the drill very well. And then we get to part three, checkpoint 19, criminal internment camp. It's 1 week later. He's awaiting trial. His instructions must have been.
He's introduced in the scene because he's got like two black eyes. He looks awful. Zero's like, what happened to you? And he's like, the first rule about being in prison is you must never be a candy ass.
The Rock took that to heart.
And then he talks about how he beat up this one dude. And then at the end of the story about how he beat up this guy, he goes, he's actually become a really dear friend. I hope you meet him one day.
Yeah, he's actually become a very dear friend. And what's funny about that is later in the movie, we find out he really is a very dear friend of his now. Mm-hmm. Gustav does not lie.
No.
First rule of being in prison, you must never be a candy ass.
Candy ass.
take that to heart. So he talks about how they need to find Serge X because he's now the prime witness in the fact that Gustav is wanted for killing the Countess, which is why he's in prison. I don't even think I mentioned that. And he does have an alibi. He was out banging the wife of the Duke of Westphalia. And he's like, but I could never betray her. But actually, the bitch legged it is really why he can't use her, because she's gone. And we cut to a brief thing of Jopling looking for Serge, Jopling played by Willem Dafoe, and a bit about, you know, Gustav's letter to his staff. Because there's this funny bit that keeps coming up where he always has these long staff meetings while the people are dining. And they usually just start eating while he's reciting his long poems.
Yeah. Would you like to work for someone like Gustav?
I actually would.
Yeah?
I would.
I think I would too. I think it would be one of those things where it's like, I can see all of my coworkers like, oh my God, Gustav sucks. He's so pretentious, but I would be so charmed by him.
I'm uncomfortable admitting this, but because I've been a manager at many places. I think it's more that I am Gustav, you know? Mostly a douche.
You often, before we sit down and record these episodes, you recite poetry.
I do. Yeah. And I've tried to sleep with you many times. I sleep all with all of my the friends. Time.
Because I'm blonde and vain. and you're also the most liberally perfumed man of Laird de Panache I've ever met.
I love Laird de Panache. Dimitri is setting Jopling to work more, finding Serge. And then we get the bit with Gustav delivering mush to everybody. And he makes a friend in the giant scary man by encouraging him to get his vitamins.
Good morning, Pinky.
Well, Pinky says, you're a really straight fellow. I've never been accused of that before. I died at that joke. As somebody who people have always assumed was gay, it hit me in the heart. Never been accused of that before. And then we meet Ludwig and the gang, and his criminal friends basically say they have a plan to escape the prison, but they're going to need digging tools. And he devises a plan to utilize Agatha for that. But at this point, we cut back to the present, or rather the 60s, excuse me, when Mustafa was crying at the mere thought of Agatha. And he takes us on this tale that 1 month earlier, prior to the prison incident, she had agreed to marry him. I like the Z to A joke as well, the book gift that he gives her.
Yeah, that's a great line. Zero's got some riz, you know?
He does. He's got what the kids would call riz, but also not. He gives her the gift and he's like, it's a book.
I ruined the surprise.
That's okay. I'd still like to open it.
I do that shot of Saoirse Ronan as Agatha on the carousel. We got all the lights behind her that are in bokeh. It's just a really beautiful shot. So good.
It's fantastic.
And she's got a very unique birthmark. Gorgeous.
She does.
Is it supposed to be a birthmark that looks like Mexico, the country of Mexico?
You know, I'm not a geographically talented man. I never noticed what the shape would be.
I think it's Mexico because I think at one point Gustav actually calls it out towards the end of the movie.
Does
where he's like, our lives are in the hands of a woman with a bloody Mexican tattoo on her face or whatever he says.
I didn't hear that. But he does cross-examine her to make sure that she's appropriate for Zero. And he gets his seal of approval. But also Zero is constantly telling him not to flirt with her. Is he flirting with you?
Union.
Yes, he is. Don't flirt with her.
he got her a box of like frozen white tulips or something.
Yeah. But she is baking the digging tools at Mendel's, everybody's favorite bakery in Zabrowka, and sending them to the jail that way. And I love the whole bit about how the guard, they're so beautiful, these pastries, that the guard doesn't want to hurt them. So that's why he won't find the tools, because he's like, oh, can't break this. This is art, right?
Yeah.
Confectionery art.
I get that. Have you ever seen those shows that are like, is it cake? It's just cake that's so well made to look like, how do you eat that? Why would anyone eat that stuff? Because I would feel so bad. So I understand this prison guard's problem here.
Yeah, his hesitance, his reluctance to do that. Mm-hmm. I had a dating show idea that I called Is It Cake? But got had to scrap it after that show came out. So just think of that what you will. Kovacs, we cut to him talking to Dimitri about the will, and says that something is missing from this massive will, because it's like, you know, hundreds of different leaflets of paper and envelopes and tiny documents. And they both have their little bit where they don't agree, right? Like, let's just forget about this and call it done. Agreed. And then Kovacs, not agreed, you know, as I represent the deceased in this matter. So they both sling not agreeds back and forth. Jopling chucks his cat out the window as a retort.
I love Jeff Goldblum's response where he just is kind of like, did you just throw my cat out a window? And the sister's like, no, he didn't do that. Nah.
Definitely. Oh, yeah, there's always the three sisters off to the side. Yeah.
And then when he looks out the window, it's just this like cat that's just like cartoonishly splayed out on the ground.
Splatted. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he has to carry it around. He left his dead cat at coat check, we find out later. But the guys are digging away in prison. Zero tells Agatha about boy with apple, and she doesn't deal in stolen fine art. She's kind of aghast at all this, but he's like, just follow my instructions, damn it.
Just do it.
And then he sneaks out. But the Joplin is pursuing Kovacs. He stalks him through the museum and eventually cuts off his fingers.
That's brutal, man.
By slamming the door and kills him. Yeah, it's unpleasant.
That's like the most brutal thing that ever has happened in a Wes Anderson movie, I think.
I think you're right. I had to take a moment to think about it, honestly, Steve. At this point, we get to, I don't know if it's part four or just a new section. It's called Checkpoint 19, Drainage Tunnel B. And they're sneaking out through the hole that they've dug. Some weird guy decides he wants to snitch.
Hey, how'd you guys get out there? Hey, they're trying to escape. Hey.
I love how aghast Harvey Keitel, we didn't even mention that it's played by Harvey Keitel.
Oh, yeah.
Which is amazing. But Harvey Keitel is just disgusted. That he would, why would you snitch? It's true. It is true. What do you gain from this?
What's wrong with you? Yes. Why would you do that?
He's like, what? But that Pinky comes to their aid and kills the man, I assume, which is kind of funny. And then they end up almost at the end of their journey. They just snuck all the way to a guard station.
Yeah.
But one of their brave members, because they keep alluding to this tiny prison knife that they've made that this guy carries. They were like cutting up their pastries with it and stuff earlier. Mm-hmm. He just heroically jumps in there with that and kills all four of them. But the last guard kills him as well. And Gustav says,
I suppose you'd call that a draw.
I suppose you'd call that a draw. He's right. So Gunther was slain in the catacombs. When he escapes, Zero's out there waiting. All the other guys get away, but there is no safe house for he and Zero. He also forgot his lair to panache, and he's very upset that Gustav about that, and ends up having he shits all over him, like his whole character, you know, says everything mm-hmm. bad you could possibly say about him.
Yeah.
And then finds out, oh, so you're more of a refugee, really. I'm so, so sorry. That was completely inexcusable. And then Zero tries to recite his own poem. And Gustav is like, oh, you're doing so, so well. That is so beautiful. But I feel like we should get away right now because the guards start to come.
I'm going to have to stop you right there because the alarm has gone off.
Yeah, they've been standing there right outside the prison walls the entire time, just yapping.
Yeah, and while they're yapping to each other, the other three guards that escape inmates that have escaped with them are just like stealing a bus and beating up a bus driver.
Yeah, they're like killing a bus driver and taking off, doing all kinds of shit.
Yeah. I do love this moment between Gustav and Zero because, like you said, Gustav is really kind of laying into Zero. He's like, I smell awful and it's really embarrassing and you only had these jobs and you failed me. And he's like, give him such a hard, shitty time and starts making like sort of assumptions about him being from another country. And he's being really, really honestly very disparaging. And then Zero kind of brings us to reality. Like, well, actually I came here because there was a war. My father was murdered. My family was executed by firing squad. My whole village burned to the ground. And I just really wanted to work for this hotel because I lost everything. And immediately Gustav is like, bloody idiot I am. I apologize on behalf of the hotel.
Yeah.
We're better than that.
I have insulted you and that it's a bad look for the hotel. He's always in character as representing the hotel. And I kind of, it's a sad thing that that's his identity, you know, very capitalistic. But honestly, I admire it. He's got a purpose in life, goddammit. And we could all be so lucky. But at this point, we find little Albert investigating the hole. That sounds like a weird sentence. Jopling is there, and Albert kind of calls him out on that and kicks him out. But on the way out, he licks the box and says, Mendels. Which would lead him back to Agatha, unfortunately. And at this point in the story, we meet the Society of the Crossed Keys. And
yes.
They make call after call. All of the hotel concierges around the world are...
How does one come by front row aisle seats for the first night of the opera Tuscana with one day's notice? How does one arrange a private viewing of the tapestry collection at the Royal Saxon Gallery? How does one secure a corner table at the Chaise Dominique on a Thursday?
You formally call the special services of the Society of the Cross Keys. That's
the only way.
It's easy as that.
But the Society of the Cross Keys gets them out, and Zero is very confused when they show up to pick them up. And of course, they brought also the Lair du Panache, and he gives Zero a little squirt, which is adorable.
We get like a ton of, this is like all the Easter
cameos.
Eggs for anybody who's a huge Wes mm-hmm. Anderson fan. Cause all these actors who play typically like minor characters other than Bill Murray, are the different concierges that are called forth. And so it's a fun little, if you know, you know, sort of Easter egg.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a Wes Anderson movie without Bill Murray.
Right.
And then, we cut to Jopling, who has a photo of Agatha, and he goes back to Serge's sister again. This time he kills her, we soon find out. Dimitri realizes that Boy with Apple is gone at this point as well. And he smashes I think it's like a nude painting that he has there in its place.
I love this sequence because Dimitri sees the different painting where Boy with Apple used to be. He gets mad, he's like, what the hell is this shit? And he like breaks it, and his three sisters off to the side. And if you listen to them, what they're saying is so funny. One of them literally says like, how are you just now realizing it's not there?
He's had other things on his mind, like a murder.
Yeah.
Gustav asks to officiate the wedding betwixt Agatha and Zero. And he says, absolutely, I would love that. But don't flirt with her. and then we see that a local girl's head has been found in a laundry basket. And you're made to believe that, oh, no, it might be Agatha. But it's Serge's sister. Thank goodness.
I remember watching this movie. I actually watched it maybe 3 or 4 months ago with Erica. She had never seen any Wes Anderson movie, so we kind of did a Wes Anderson movie marathon. Mm. And when we were watching this movie, I remember when they kind of lead you to believe that Agatha was the one that was killed. She was so mad for like the 30 seconds where they let you think that. She's like, no, they didn't kill her. That's all. No, I'm so mad. It's just the club-footed sister.
Whew. Dodged a bullet there.
Thank God.
I love Saoirse Ronan. I agree. That would have been heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. I love this whole bit where like the robed man gives them instructions to get on the cable car. And then they swap cable cars at the top and they go to the mountain observatory. And there's like a family in it with them in the middle.
Are you concierge Gustav from the Grand Budapest Hotel in Naples Bad? Yes.
Yeah, but then the third time, God damn it, yes. It ultimately ends up in a confession booth, and Serge is in there, and he tells him at that point about the second copy of the second will. But in the middle of that, Serge is strangled by Jopling, and they chase him in this harrowing ski chase all the way through all of the games of the Winter Olympics, including the luge, of course. It turns into Cool Runnings for a moment.
I love it when Wes Anderson does what would be considered like big action set pieces, because he never really films them. They're always like done with like these like purposely, they purposely look like little miniatures from like super far away.
Yeah.
It just is part of the charm of this filmmaker style. Like most of his movies are very low budgeted, and you can kind of tell there's not like a lot of like explosions and stuff, but it's big enough to where they can do all this great art department stuff. And because they do something similar with a car chase scene in The French Dispatch. Is that right?
Yes.
They cut to like an animated portion where they're in a car.
Yes.
I love that shit. It just gives the movie so much more character. It's great.
Yeah, they're never like harrowing. It's more like it's like watching Chicken Run or something, you know? It's all about the production design. But poor Serge is dead, and they're chasing him through. And finally they get to, after the luge jump, they lose their little, because they stole like Santa's sleigh from a display is what they were riding on. So they're laying in the snow. Zero's off to the side. And unfortunately, Gustav is hanging off the mountain. And Jopling is about to kill him by stomping him off the cliff when at the last second, Zero pushes him off. And it's funny because Gustav is like reading this final poem and it's interrupted by, oh, fuck, you got him. You know? It's so good.
So good.
Such a belly laugh. Which brings us to part five, the second copy of the second will. And we cut to Agatha at the Grand Budapest Hotel getting Boy with Apple as instructed by Zero.
But war has also, that war that we've been kind of getting hints of has officially begun. So they've made the Grand Budapest Hotel some sort of like forward operating base for the army.
It's basically a barracks. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Zero stops to train the lobby boy, though, because after he gets information about the whereabouts of Agatha, he turns and says, you shouldn't have told me that. You should be a stone wall. They take pride in their lobby boy. They really they do. So there's a chase where Dimitri is chasing Agatha, and then they're Zero and Gustav are chasing them both. He ends up shooting at them on like the third floor. And then everyone else in the building just starts shooting because they're all.
So then I started blasting.
They all have guns. He ends up trying to help Agatha, but then falling because she's hanging from outside the building. And then he just falls right next to her instead of helping her. And they both fall.
But she's the one that sees, she sees the second will in this. The second copy of the second will.
Yeah.
From where she's dangling.
Cool how that's discovered, because he was holding Boy with Apple and then she can see it there. They fall in the Mendel's truck, but are able to get the second will in the picture after that. And then we kind of just get this. What's it called when you just get a yada, yada, yada at the end of a movie? Epilogue.
Epilogue.
You know, but everything happily ever after, except Agatha and their son. Zero had a son with Agatha. They both died just like 2 years after the end of the events that we see of the Prussian grip.
Yeah.
A very treatable illness now. And that's why he's so lonely and just goes back to the, and we get the whole bit. It's so emotive where he's, oh, I get it. You like loved your job here and you miss Gustav. And he's like, no, I mean, I do, but like, I do this for Agatha. That's why I bought the hotel, or why I keep the hotel.
Yeah. He says we were happy here for a while. This last bit, I cry every time because there's that, what we just talked about where, F. Murray Abraham says, you know, I bought it for her. We were happy here for a while. But then he tells us what happened to Gustav, who the second reading of the second will reveals that in the event of Tilda Swinton's character being murdered, he would receive all of the money. So he becomes the super rich, the super blonde, the super vain, the super insecure patron of the Grand Budapest Hotel. Zero becomes the concierge of the hotel. But there's a sequence where they're on train again and they get stopped at another checkpoint. It's Zero, Agatha, and Gustav, and the stand-in for the Nazi characters want to take Zero again. And once again, Gustav steps up and like, hey, you can't do this.
If you lay one finger on my lobby boy, I'm gonna, you know, kill you. And so he butts him with his rifle and takes it as a challenge, and Gustav punches him, right? That he violently jumps up, and then we find out that they shot him.
Faint glimmers of civilization left in this barbaric slaughterhouse that was once known as humanity, and he was one of them.
Mm. Stop. People make fun of me when I cry on the pod.
And even he says, like, I think Jude Law's character asks F. Murray Abraham about, you know, do you have this connection to this man and his world? And he's like, oh no, his world was gone long before he even entered it. But he sustained the illusion with a marvelous grace. Like, I just love the writing in this movie. The way the characters talk is so, yeah, it's beautiful. Exactly.
It's a perfect movie. One of my absolute favorites. And I think Brent Stradamus, having powers of foresight into the future, knew that about me, which is why they recommended it. Knew what a Wes Anderson fan you are.
And I love the way this movie ends. Sorry, I'm going to circle back to something I talked to in the beginning. Mm-hmm. The movie ends where Jude Law's character, now if we've gotten the story from the 30s, it ends with what happened with Gustav. We go back to Jude Law's character asking him about why he has the ruin or the hotel. And then he calls it was an enchanting old ruin. But then he goes on this little, he's reading basically the end of the book that character has written. And he's like, I never managed to see it again.
it cuts to Tom Wilkinson also saying, kind of wrapping up the same thing. And then it cuts to the little girl finishing the book in the cemetery next to Tom Wilkinson's statue. And the way the movie kind of exits out of this story is so beautiful. It's the perfect interpretation of how I feel whenever I finish a book that was really, really good. And it just kind of hits you and you close the book and you just kind of have that nostalgic, like, wow, that was something really, really amazing. And I just kind of want to sit with it for a while because the music's great. We mentioned in the Interstellar review that the score for Interstellar was so good. We were so surprised it didn't win best score at the Oscars that year. That was because this movie score was what won that year. And it really, you know, when the movie exits out of its narrative with these different authors and people reading the book, and then you sit with the music, you really just sort of kind of like, wow, that, it's a great feeling to have. I love the ending of this movie.
Wow. I was the concierge during World War II.
Wow. Wow. Thank you. The constant work. I mean, it's not to be taken lightly. Absolutely. That was a beautiful way to put it. And something, I think this is the kind of movie that's so, like many of Wes's films, that it's so detailed and layered. There's something new. There's like a joke that I didn't notice to laugh at because I've only seen it twice. So I can't imagine what other layers to this onion that there are.
But I noticed it's infinitely a joke.
Rewatchable.
I noticed a joke this path through that I had never seen before. And I'm curious if you caught it. It's towards the beginning when F. Murray Abraham's talking to Jude Law in the baths. And they're like, he says something like, oh, our friend, Monsieur Jean. Well, I think we can agree he's not even a third rate concierge, but he's a nice dude. When he starts to talk about him, you can see Jason Schwartzman with like a cigarette in his mouth, like passing frame. And he gets out of frame, but then his body just kind of shoots back in the frame. It's like, are you talking about me?
No, I didn't see him there.
Yeah. So he hears that whole bit about it. He's not that great of a concierge because he pops his head back into the background and you can see him like, and like, keep walking.
That's amazing. No, I never noticed that
before.
Cause he's like just putting half smoked cigarettes in his front pocket when a customer's coming and stuff, like, hello.
Yeah.
He's trying, you know? But in his defense, nobody's coming to that fucking hotel anyway.
So. No, they even say that hotel should have been demolished like years prior, but it's opened for some reason still.
Because what's his face?
Because you're a
Mustafa. Mustafa's just keeping it going, barely.
Yeah.
Fucking love this movie. What a masterpiece. What a picture. What a moving picture. Thank you so much for recommending it. Thank you, Steve, for chatting with me about a movie you love so dear.
Well, thank you.
What's coming out Friday? We got something dropping in a couple days, don't we?
Spirited Away is what's dropping out on Friday. Yeah. We have a special guest who is joining us for Friday's pod. I'm excited for you guys to see who they are. I guess there's two guests. Would you say we have two guests on Friday?
Is there two guests?
Well, there's...
Oh, there is a secret guest. That's right. I got you. A mystical guest, some might say. And while you're listening to Spirited Away, we will be on a plane heading for South by Southwest. And then Monday, you get to listen to Return of the Jedi, which we've already recorded. And then who knows what shenanigans we'll get up to in Texas. We'll let you guys know, you know, maybe Civil War. We don't know what's going to happen there.
Hey, I've seen the trailer. We're going to be in the Alliance of Texas and Florida when we're down there.
Civil War is actually premiering there, but it's also funny.
It's premiering the day we're leaving. I was so bummed when you told me that because I was like, fuck, I would totally love to see that movie.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. Everybody kept trying to get me to move my flight, and I'm like, I could, but it's like, I miss my kids and stuff at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's my third festival, and it has yet to happen where halfway through I'm not like, all right, I'm done. You know, to be honest, I just miss my family and shit. But we'll see how it goes. At least I've never had you there with me before.
It's so me.
It'd be less lonely. But anywho, that's all the time we've got for right now. We've got to go return some videotapes. My name is Kit.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming.